After the fierce storms of adversity have passed over you, your spirit will be refreshed and made stronger for the next trial. 140. At no time in the history of your world has there been such possibilities of a heaven on earth as today. There is an abundance for each and every one, if properly distributed and remunerated. There need be no little ones crying for bread, or aged ones shivering with cold. Too true that man's inhumanity to man has made countless thousands mourn. Put yourself in your neighbor's place, before you decide any question as to him, and we feel sure that justice will be given. 141. There is no need of mortals looking forward to the spirit world as the only hope of happiness and rest. Stop lying, cheating and plundering upon earth, do as you would be done by, and enjoy upon earth, the advantages of the highest spheres. Don't think that all you have to do to become spiritual is to give up the coarse animal foods of earth. My friends, you must learn to assimilate the spiritual foods or starve your soul. It is just as essential that you feed the soul as that you feed your earthly body. And it is not necessary that you take the life of other creatures to do so. Study your neighbor. Make his wants your wants, for a short time feel as he does. Apply to yourself, and if possible, uplift him. Do not feel that you should bring yourself to his level, if he will not rise to yours. Forget the petty struggles of earth life, they are naught to eternity. Dr. Reed Orlando Stevens. 142. After Dr. Reed had written and returned into the cabinet, one whom we had not before known appeared at the writing desk and wrote, in the same tablet that Dr. Reed used, in words as follows, to wit, 143. Your world has been planned for the investigation of nature's truths, and the unfoldment of moral and intellectual progress. Your world is not a playground, it is a schoolroom. Your lives are not for holidays, but for an education, and the one lesson for you all is, how to better your condition. What makes a man a good musician? Practice. What makes a man a good artist, a good stenographer? Practice. What makes a man a good man? Practice. Nothing else. If a man does not exercise his arms, he will develop no muscles, and if a man does not exercise his soul, he cannot hope to gain strength of character, nor the beauty of spiritual growth. The constitution of great characters is only to be built up by ceaseless practice. 144. Now what we wish to do, is to help you firmly to grasp this simple principle of cause and effect in the spirit world. All nature is a standing protest against the absurdity of expecting to secure spiritual effects, or any effects, without the employment of appropriate causes. 145. As we look back upon the past years of your lives, we find your unhappiness has chiefly come from the succession of personal mortifications and almost trivial disappointments which the intercourse of life has brought you. Great trials come at lengthened intervals and you rise to breast them, but it is the petty functions of everyday lives with one another, the jar of business or of work, the discord of the domestic circle, the collapse of your ambition, the crossing of your will, which makes inward peace impossible. 146. There are some men and women in whose company you cannot think mean thoughts, or speak ungenerous words. Their very presence is elevation, purification. Your best natures are drawn out by their intercourse, and you find music in your soul that you never discovered before. Suppose that influence should be prolonged through a month, a year or a lifetime, what then would your lives be? 147. Life is given to you forever. Life is the only one of all the gifts that nature will never take from you. Your poor body of dust may molder away upon some desert of your earth, or become food for the eagle, but the life that is given will never be extinguished. The breath of the body is not the life of man. That only keeps in motion the wonderful mechanism that is tied to the clay, but it is the soul, the spirit principle, that can never die, that forms your life, that will be ever yours, finally dwelling among people in a brighter world than you now inhabit. Signed, Orlando Stevens. Notice the tests in this case. 148. As this spirit was writing, he would stop and soliloquize somewhat thus: some people are so stingy. They think their money is all there is to it. Then proceed to write again. Let me see where I was at. Oh. Yes. Then dash away at writing. Hold on, I must get more strength. A voice in the cabinet. Well, why don't you go ahead? Or quit and give somebody else a chance. Then with great vigor beginning again to write, says, no, sir, I am going to finish this if I never come back again. 149. Some readers of this book may not be in possession of its predecessors, Rending the Veil and Beyond the Veil, and careful attention to these little episodes, as the above, but with ever varying detail, will show their purpose to be unquestionable tests to the circle, precluding their minds from discovering chance of fraud in their retrospections, and in stopping the reader, as going on, from entertaining the idea that the circle did not have sufficient test conditions. Because, since the advent of the spiritual rostrum and phenomenal criticisms in journalism, that little word test is made the turning point in the whole question of the authenticating evidences of personal individualized continuity of life. A. Hence, the guides, in this spirit band having control of the phenomena of these seances, connect some test with almost every particular phenomenon given, and this record aims to present the mind of the reader with the sufficiency of them to have him understand what this circle relies on for the integrity and authenticity of the phenomena given. We cannot stop to elucidate every test given, nor is it necessary, for the reader that has not enough of acumen and discernment to see the gist of the test, would not be benefited by elucidation. An anonymous orator. 150. After the spirit, Orlando Stevens, had vanished, instantly a spirit in form, that was a stranger to the circle, was observed to be moving about in front of the cabinet, and speaking in good oral tones, though somewhat peculiarly, said, I am astonished that spiritualists would allow Christian scientists to so much surpass them in wealth and in society, when all the Christian scientist has, that is real and of value to him or to the world, is what of spiritualism he has. His presence may be attended by some work of healing, but he attributes his healing to the simple idea that there is no disease, no sickness. That, in reality, those claiming to be sick are not really sick, are not diseased, but only think so, and that, to effect a cure, all that is necessary is to change that hypnotic delusive affirmative into a negative thought, in the patient, and the patient is well. Of course, when the patient, by any means, gets relief, to conscious recovery, his mind is changed, but did the change of mind make the patient well, or did the patient's getting well change his mind? In other words, is the patient's idea that he is diseased an hypnotic delusion and his recovery nothing more than changing the hypnotism? 151. It has been said that sickness is as natural as health. It has been said that, even the beautiful flower runs its natural course, serves its purpose, sickens, withers away and dies. How unfortunate that the flower could not think it was only hypnotically deluded. For had it not been so, it would live on forever and, as may be true, we shall meet it on the other side of Jordan. Oh, if that beautiful tree could only think so, it would never die. A. I do not wish to do their theory injustice. But, it seems to me, carried to its legitimate conclusion, all you need do when in want of a dollar is to just stop a moment and think you have it and reach down into your pocket and get it, or think your check for it will be honored at the bank. B. No friends, they do not prove their theories, except in a sophisticated way. If they do present a phenomenal fact they assign an erroneous cause, and this, to establish and perpetuate another priesthood delusion, the absolute delusion of the whole business. 152. Spiritualists though, are able to prove by their works, phenomena and legitimate logic, their claims. They have done so for years and will continue to do so, though they, as a class, are poor now, yet by the help of the spirit world in another 20 years it will be booming and people will begin to take their hats off to the boom. It is coming, but don't waste your pearls on the swine. 153. If you people were called into a court of justice to testify in the everyday affairs of life, you would be pronounced sane and absolutely competent. But on another occasion, someone desires to avoid the force of your testimony and has found out that you are a spiritualist, and seeks to break your testimony, the same court that held you sane, before now, disregarding your constitutional rights, allows you questioned as to your religion, and pronounces you insane and incompetent to testify on account of your alleged knowledge of immortality, obtained from the facts of spiritualism, but not many more years, and spiritualism will be acknowledged, even in society. A. As the spirit seemed to be closing, Mrs. McClung, desiring a fuller explanation of what the spirit intended by saying, "Sickness is as natural as life, even flowers have sickness," asked the spirit, "Am I to understand that we cannot so far develop our souls as to produce conditions that will avoid all sickness?" Spirit: "The soul is the spirit or life principle, and so long as it is in the body, there must be sickness." Mrs. M: "Is it not possible for us to so develop our souls and soul power as to overcome and neutralize all conditions producing sickness, so that we may not experience the sickness?" Spirit: "It is true that the mind has influence over the organization, but the mind gets its strength, its power, its education, to direct that influence, almost wholly from experience in contact with nature's laws. But each soul, spirit, mind, person, must develop from his or her own experience. There is nothing not embraced in or under law, and an intelligence thoroughly understanding the laws that cause sickness, pain and premature dissolution, may be able to avert, or modify, effects, but these laws, and their various workings, are learned only by experience. If the law of sickness is natural and the law of health be natural, and the law of life be natural, why not life, death, sickness and pain be all equally natural?" The spirit, unable to hold its form longer, gave way to a spirit lady messenger, 131, who, in glorious white array, stood near the trumpet, and in whisper, continued the discussion in substance, thus, 154. The educated mind is able to modify conditions, but each mind gets its education from experience, and this experience develops soul force. We who have passed through these schools of experience, are able to perceive and understand the conditions through which we have passed, and making use of our lessons of experience has made for us glorious homes in these beautiful realms, and we are able to rejoice that Mother Nature has driven us, by chastisement, out of the rudimental, through one condition after another, until we can discern beauty and adaptability in all things working together for the good of us all. We cannot only see the conditions that create sickness, but we can see and recognize the necessity of it all. We can, by faith derived from our experiences, discern all these supposed low conditions to be the foundation upon which the unutterable glory of the dwellers of the higher spheres is founded. We see that one little eddy in life forces produces a certain sickness here, and another there, and sickness, pain and dissolution over yonder. We can see that these things are necessary, as much the one as the other. Were it not for death, as you call it, your world would be crowded to starvation or non-production, and the beautiful spirit world would be a waste howling wilderness. Were it not for pain, you would not be warned of danger, nor study how to avert it. We can see clearly that sickness is a necessity. If the child place its finger or foot in the fire, the pain teaches it to do so no more. All natural punishment is disciplinary, not vindictive, to finally place all in the highest heaven and to lift everyone out of the depths of hell, instead of to vindictively confine one eternally there. I presume the good lady, and we thank her for the question, will see a little more light on this whole matter from this discussion. And instantly, this radiant intelligence was gone into the cabinet and there dictating to Bessie, who continues the dialogue in loud oral tones, in the cabinet, and asks, "Is the question answered to satisfaction of the lady?" Mrs. M: "I see some more light, but do not yet see but that it is possible for people to avert many things that befall them." Bessie: "Don't you believe in prophecy?" Mrs. M: "Yes, I think it possible." Bessie: "Well, how? If the cause does not exist to produce the effect, can it be possible? Many near to death use all kinds of proposed remedies, some die, and others in the same apparent condition, do not die. Why do some of them die and others live?" Mrs. M: "I don't know, unless it was the time for some and not for others, but that looks too much like we should do nothing but let things go." 155. Bessie closes. "Now you have it. There is no one born into your world but whose life is mapped out from infancy, and nothing in the universe will divert from the line of that mapping. Say, McKinley and Garfield were shot. All the medical skill that money could obtain was used, and they both had to go in spite of doctors and the prayers of the whole world. Why was that? Their time and place on the map for them to go had been reached, and they had to go. While others have been injured the same way and had but little medical aid and no prayers, and they recovered, and why was that? Their time had not come, but afterward, when it did come, they too had to go. And nothing mortal man, priests or angels could do, would avail otherwise. Seance number 8, July 20, 1902 156. Minutes of last seance read and approved by the circle. And when circle was seated in seance room and medium entranced in cabinet, the voice of Sam proclaimed, "The minutes as read tonight are entirely satisfactory to all the spirits who took part in proceedings of last meeting." 157. Then Dr. Reed appeared, and observing that pains had been taken to have the seance room furnished and decorated with numerous bouquets of fresh-cut flowers, this spirit stepped to the point where the orators usually stand for speaking, and said, "Friends, we thank you for those beautiful flowers. We are attracted and feel so kindly toward all those who so much regard us, as to present us those innocent expressions of the purity of unfolding nature. Flowers are so free from sin. Flowers are such fit emblems of innocence, purity and love. Bring us flowers, for they attract our better nature. But some persons are different." If it had been Sam or Daniel O'Brien speaking, we should have expected, instead of the last sentence, to have it read, "But the turkey buzzard is not delighted with sweet-scented flowers." 158. And Daniel O'Brien does, indeed, put in his appearance at this juncture, seizing the trumpet, and through it speaking in very loud voice, saying, "And are you all well and happy this evening?" Circle, "All well as usual and feeling somewhat happy." Spirit, "Well, and indeed I am glad of that, and I hope that, when we get over here where all is peace and plenty, and where harmony reigns supreme, without discords, where we have other things to delight us beside talking about our neighbors, and we don't have to shoot innocent birds, nor shed other blood for a living, but where everything of life has as much right to its life as any other thing, you will be prepared by your earth life to enjoy our fare, and be as happy as we. Good night." 159. And now comes the artist in the manner as described in R. V. and B. V. and takes a sheet of sketch paper, exhibits the same to the circle, and the circle pronouncing the paper clean, the spirit proceeded to make a sketch of what proved to represent a woman having very great abundance of dark hair hanging loosely over and behind the shoulders, and upon the head, a full golden crown, bedecked with large brilliant stars. As in Beyond the Veil, so in this book, the original drawings were made nearly life-size, bust form. In this case, the artist, once in a while, would ask the subject to stand a little more round, hold head up square, and the various expressions used by artists to have the subject properly posed, and after working over the paper with both hands and blowing over the paper all the while for a few moments, invites secretary to come up and see. And so doing, the secretary saw the picture to be nearly finished. When done, the artist gave the picture to the secretary to exhibit to the circle, and the circle made expressions of astonishment and delight at the work. August Belcher dictates of his career on earth and in spirit life, and his work of redemption. 160. A spirit typewriting, made in 8 seconds to the line of 12 words, or 2/3 of a second to the word, which would be at the rate of 90 words per minute. 775 words in the writing, 45 punctuation marks, some quotation marks. All of these marks, so far as used, were correctly placed. Only 3 words misspelled and only 3 misspacing in the 700 spaces made, and the following are the words of the writing, to wit, 161. It does not seem possible, when I look around and see all the beautiful pictures in my studio, that it can be that I was once a barefoot peasant boy upon earth, who yearned to put all the beautiful things I daily saw into colors, that all might enjoy them with me. 162. As I drove out the flock in the dew-sparkling morn, I was sure nothing could surpass the beauty of a summer morning, yet, when the evening bells were tolling and I wandered slowly homeward with my little flock, I would say, the evening was the most beautiful part of the day. 163. Thus the seasons sped swiftly by, bringing me no nearer my heart's desire. How I longed for a box of colors none but those who have had similar experience can know. I thought the much talked of heaven would be far more to my liking if some of the mansions were filled with colors. I felt that I would rather have a few paints than all the pearly gates that could be thought of. I did not dare to express such thoughts to others, but when alone, I often dropped stitches in my knitting, while trying to create a heaven just suited to me. My mother would make me do the knitting over, only to find more mistakes to vex her. I passed my earth life in unsatisfied longings. 164. But when I entered spirit life, I was overjoyed to find that my dreams were true and that I could paint as many pictures as I chose. 165. Yet a wise spirit teacher advised me to return to earth and see if there were not many little acts of kindness that I had passed by unnoticed while I dreamed daydreams filled only with myself and pictures. I had left so many little things undone that it took me almost half a century before I could, conscientiously, begin upon my artistic career. I had not seriously harmed anyone, but I had left undone things that would have helped others to have been better men and women. I had neglected doing for others what I would have had them do for me. 166. I have been of great assistance to other spirits since then and have earned my reward. I do not inspire any of the artists of earth. My work lies among those in lower conditions than I. I assist them by pictures. Very few people are gifted with strong imaginations, and when they are stubborn and unrelenting, I pick out some incident in their earth life that I know will appeal to the best part of their natures, and more rapidly than I can tell you about it, I produce a large picture for them to see. 167. For example, only a short time ago, a poor wretch, killed in a drunken brawl, came under my care. His associates upon earth had been low and vile. He believed the earth life was all of life and lived for that alone. I said to him, "My friend, I feel sorry for you and would like to help you. Is there not some way that I can make you happier?" He said he had never done anything he was ashamed of and that he didn't need any help. 168. I made no reply but began to sketch a picture. It was a quiet country scene. The sun was just sinking behind the nearby hills. In front of the gate a little boy was playing. My new charge was coming down the road. He looked tired and hungry. The picture changed rapidly under skillful touches until he stood before the little boy. 169. The next scene showed him at the supper table. 170. Next we see him rob the kind inmates and set fire to their dwelling. 171. The last scene I painted for him was the funeral of the little boy, whose charred remains had been found among the smoldering ruins of his once happy home. When I had finished, I turned and said, "My friend, was there anything in the pictures I have just painted that has caused you to think that there were things you did upon earth that were not right?" His chin sank upon his breast, and tears coursed down his cheeks. I left him alone. I knew then that his conscience was awakened, and that one by one, his misdeeds would come trooping in. He began progressing from that time on, and it may be years, but, sooner or later, he will take the right road. Signed, August Belcher. 172. The attention of the reader may be directed to consider, for a moment, another factor in the foregoing case: the amount of force necessarily collected and expended in the production of this typewriting. The spirit took from the writing desk the paper used, one sheet at a time, placed it in the machine and properly adjusted it, then at end of each line moved the paper holder back to the beginning point, then spaced the lines and words. Each letter and punctuation mark required a separate muscular movement. Altogether, more than 4,000 motions, and all done in less than 15 minutes. 173. While the typewriting was in progress, the spirit desired the circle to engage in general conversation, and when the writing was complete, The question "Why does it seem so difficult for spirits to give their names?" was asked. The spirit, Dr. J.B. Lamb, arose to the discussion, saying, 174. Friends, did you consider with spirits as you do with your earthly friends when you meet them you would have better success at seances? With friends of earth, whom you meet, you are friendly, sociable. Why, John, how are you? How is Uncle Reuben? Have you met Aunt Sally lately? Well, James, I am so glad to see you. And you completely unbosom yourself to your friends there, but when you get to a seance, you shut yourselves up like a clam. You don't know anything you do know, and you don't know your spirit friends. And you ask, can you tell me your name, please? I don't believe I know you. And you act so coldly that you repel your spirit friend. If you could get into your mind and remember that we are people, and treat us accordingly, we could reveal ourselves better to you. And I want to say to you that spirits are not half as likely to play deception as mortals are. You come to us with deception, with a snare and a trap, to trap spirits, and then you think because they do not choose to walk into your little web that you have them trapped. Of course there are merchants and tradesmen of all kinds who expect to find fraud in all mediums, for they are frauds themselves. Go to some drugstore, ask, how much to fill this prescription? And with the blandest smile, in half whisper and polite bow only 75 cents, with a twinkle of the eye as if to say, seeing it is you, we will give you a bargain. You say, 75 cents. Good gracious, 75 cents for that little box of bread pills? That's too much. You can let M go for half a dollar surely? Druggist, upon my word of honor we cannot, they cost us 50 cents over on the other side of the world and we have to pay freight. We scarcely get 5% profit at 75 cents, when in fact, the bills didn't cost the druggist nickel. Instead of only 5% he has nearly 1,400%. Some druggists and merchants, the clothiers and dressmakers, evade the truth. But of all the evasive machines in the world is your political machine. You can hardly find the truth anywhere in all the world of politics. Oh! Please do not judge us by yourselves. Yet some of these greatest of mercantile and political exploiters think it awful if they see themselves at a séance. Seance number 9, July 24, 1902, 175. Denton, speaking with much energy, said, we have said there is no such thing as mind reading, telepathy, thought transference and kindred claims, as some professional psychic scientists undertake to set up. But when we examine these claims we find they are only theories. As yet, without proof. 176. We prove that there is intelligent, individualized conscious force in the universe, which we call mind, soul or spirit. We prove this proposition beyond question, by our phenomena, here, as well as elsewhere. Our phenomena prove that men, women and children, by the process of dissolution, are not absolutely dead, but continue to live, to exist, with all of their individualized characteristics which they possessed before transition. A. That this mind, soul or spirit after transition, is able to and does hold communion with those, or many of those persons living on earth, who have not passed to spirit life out of their earthly bodies. B. That such spirit or spirits are able to transfer themselves from one location to another. C. That they are able to obtain a knowledge of the thoughts, feelings, actions and expressions of persons, in the mortal form, whom they visit. D. That they are able to visit one person in the physical form, obtain from that person a knowledge of the thoughts, feelings and desires of the person so visited, and transfer themselves to some other person in the mortal form, and in various ways, communicate such acquired knowledge to such person or persons so visited. E. We have proven this one way of communicating what are thoughts, feelings and desires of one person in the mortal to another person in the mortal. F. Therefore, until we have proof otherwise, we shall hold this to be the only solution of the phenomena, called telepathy, mind reading and thought transference. 177. Again. They claim that clairvoyance is only seeing an image. Well, so is discerning a tree, only seeing an image, but what is the image, Where is the image? What makes the image and what is it that sees or discerns the image? 178. Mind is the force in the universe, at least the intelligent force. 179.